Everybody wants to rule the world. Hey, Richard, you on?
Yes, I am.
Hey, good to hear from you. Richard, this is Dan Gonzalez and Richard Servison for American Politics 101. I'd like to welcome everyone to the program. And, Richard, you want to say anything to our start us off or anything? You got anything in mind?
I just wanted to say hello to everybody and welcome to this evening's edition of American Politics 101. Actually, I wanted to tell you, Dan, I did find an interesting article regarding that Walmart thing that I discussed with you earlier. It was actually in the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, okay. In the Wall Street Journal, huh?
Yep.
Go ahead and tell everybody what that is, Richard. It's pretty interesting. By the way, I did talk to Dr. Catherine Albrecht. She'll be on our program next week.
Okay. Excellent. Well, just this is from the Wall Street Journal Business Technology section, July 23rd, 2010. Walmart radio tags to track clothing. Walmart Stores, Inc. plans to roll out sophisticated electronic ID tags to track individual pairs of jeans and underwear. The first step in a system that advocates say better controls inventory, but some critics say raises privacy concerns. Starting next month, the retailer will place removable smart tags on individual garments that can be read by a handheld scanner. Walmart workers will be able to quickly learn, for instance, which size of Wrangler jeans is missing, with the aim of ensuring shelves are optimally stocked and inventory tightly watched. If successful, the radio frequency ID tags will be rolled out on other products at Walmart's more than 33,750 U.S. stores. Again, let me read that last sentence again. If successful, the RFID tags will be rolled out on other products at Walmart stores more than 3,750 U.S. stores. This ability to wave the wand and have a sense of all the products that are on the floor or in the back room in seconds is something that we feel can really transform our business, said Raul Vasquez, the executive in charge of Walmart stores in the western U.S. Before now, retailers, including Walmart, have primarily used RFID tags, which store unique numerical identification codes that can be scanned from a distance to track pallets of merchandise traveling through their supply chains. Walmart's broad adoption would be the largest in the world, and proponents predict it would lead other retailers to start using the electronic product codes, which remain costly. Walmart has climbed to the top of the retailing world by continuously squeezing costs out of its operations and then passing on the savings to shoppers at the checkout counter. Its methods are widely adopted by its suppliers and in turn become standard practice at other retail chains. But the company's latest attempt to use its influence, executives call it the start of a next-generation Walmart, has privacy advocates raising questions. While the tags can be removed from clothing and packages, they can't be turned off, and they are trackable. Again, while the tags can be removed from clothing and packages, they can't be turned off, and they are trackable. Some privacy advocates hypothesize that unscrupulous marketers or criminals will be able to drive by consumers' homes and scan their garbage to discover what they have recently bought. They also worry that retailers will be able to scan customers who carry new types of personal ID cards as they walk through a store without their knowledge. Several states, including Washington and New York, have begun issuing enhanced driver's licenses that contain radio frequency tags with unique ID numbers to make border crossings easier for frequent travelers. Okay, yeah, I like how they put that in there, to make it so that it's easier to, you know, cross the border. Some privacy advocates contend that retailers could theoretically scam people with such licenses as they make purchases, combine the info with their credit card data, and then know the person's identity the next time they step into the store. There are two things you really don't want to tag: clothing and identity documents. And ironically, that's where we are seeing adoption, said Catherine Albrecht, founder of a group called Consumers at Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering, and author of a book called Spy Chips, which I recommend everybody read. It's a very good book that argues against RFID technology. The inventory guys may be in the dark about this, but there are a lot of corporate marketers who are interested in tracking people as they walk sales floors. Smart tag experts dismiss Big Brother concerns as breathless conjecture, but activists have pressured companies. Ms. Albrecht and others launched a boycott of Bennington Group, SPA, last decade after an RFID maker announced it was planning to supply the company with 15 million RFID chips. Bennington later clarified that it was just evaluating the technology and never embedded a single sensor of clothing. Yeah, right. Walmart is demanding that suppliers that add the tags to removable labels or packaging instead of embedding them in the clothes to minimize fears that they could be used to track people's movements. It is also posting signs informing customers about the tags. Concerns about privacy are valid, but in this instance, the benefits far outweigh any concerns, says Sanjay Sarma, a professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Figures, the tags don't have any personal information. They are essentially barcodes with serial numbers attached, and you can easily remove them. That is a big crock if I've ever heard one. Turn around in here and say the tags don't have any personal information, they are essentially barcodes with serial numbers. People don't tend to understand that chip can also have other things besides a serial number embedded. They can put anything on those things. It's unlimited. In Europe, some retailers put the smart labels on hang tags, which are then removed at checkout. That still provides the inventory control benefit of RFID, but it takes away other important potential uses that retailers and suppliers like, such as being able to track the item all the way back to the point of a manufacturer in case of a recall, or making sure it is counterfeit. It is a counterfeit, sorry. Walmart won't say much at experts to benefit from the endeavor, but a similar pilot program at American Apparel, Inc. in 2007 found that stores with the technology saw sales rise 14.3% compared to stores without the technology, according to Avery Dennison Corp., a maker of RFID equipment. Well, I'm sure everybody's heard the phrase when it comes to computers, garbage in, garbage out. They can fudge those numbers any way they want. And while the tags wouldn't replace bulkier shoplifting sensors, Walmart experts expect they'll cut down on employee theft blaming their employees for the theft, because it will be easier to see if something's gone missing from the back room. Several other U.S. retailers, including JCPenney and Bloomingdale's, have begun experimenting with smart ID tags on clothing to better ensure shelves remain stocked with sizes and colors customers want, and numerous European retailers, notably Germany's Metro AG, have already embraced the technology. Robert Carpenter, chief executive of GS1 US, a nonprofit group that helped develop universal product code standards 4 decades ago, is now doing the same for electronic product codes, said the sensors have dropped to as little as 7 to 10 cents for 50 cents just a few years ago. He predicts that Walmart's tipping point will drive prices lower. There are definitely costs. Some labels had to be modified, said Mark Gatehouse, director of replenishment for Wrangler jeans maker VF Corp., adding that while Walmart is subsidizing the cost of the actual sensors, suppliers have had to invest in new equipment, but we view this as an investment in where things are going. Everyone is watching closely because no one wants to be competitive disadvantage, and this really lift sales. Walmart won't disclose what it's spending on the effort, but it confirms that it is subsidizing some of the costs for suppliers. Proponents, meanwhile, have high hopes for expanded use in the future beyond more efficient recalls and loss prevention. RFID tags could get rid of checkout lines. Oh, here we go. We're going to see contactless checkouts with mobile phones or kiosks or chips in the wrists, and we will see new ways to interact. Sorry, folks, that chips in the wrist I added myself. And we will see new ways to interact, such as being able to find out whether other sizes and colors are available while trying something on in the dressing room, said Bill Hargrave, head of the RFID Research Center at the University of Arkansas, which is funded in part by Walmart. That is where the magic is going to happen, but that's all years away. I don't think it's years away. I think this is right around the corner. If they're pushing to get this done so quickly, I think it's probably within the next 2 years at the most that it's really going to be fully implemented, because Walmart's been pushing for this for years. According to research that Catherine Albrecht has done, and also it's in her book Spy Chips, she stated that Walmart has already set up with their vendors that if they do not implement the RFID chips, they will no longer use those vendors, which there has been a couple that ended up having to pull out because of that. I don't have the names handy right off the top of my head, but I'm going to see if I can find them before the end of the show. And the other aspect of this is that, when they're turning around and saying it'll help keep the stores, the shelves full, and, there wouldn't be a lot of, empty inventory, empty shelves and everything like that. I'm sorry, it's still up to the human being that's actually stocking the shelves there, and they still have to track it, and there are ways. I worked at Walmart many years ago, and there are ways with the computer stuff that they have there. If they don't want something on the shelf, they can zero it out, plain and simple. Any retailer can do that. I don't know how many times I walked into my local Walmart to buy a couple different items, and for weeks on end, it's completely they're completely out of it. And I think one of the main reasons why is they're trying to get this technology pushed through a lot more to where people are going to be wanting this more once they see what's going on. But anyways, Dan, do you have anything you want to add?
I'm just excited that Dr. Catherine Albrecht will come on. She was actually going to come on tonight, but she said, I'd rather come on next week after your suggestion, Richard, about this. She said because they're going to be, I think, presenting something to Walmart, and they'll know by next Wednesday, our next program, whether Walmart has accepted it or not, because obviously – Dr. Catherine Albrecht and her organization have been very successful at stopping a lot of this and exposing it. I should say exposing it and then stopping it. Because, of course, what you read is very alarming to most people. This technology can really be used. Of course, people don't know it now, but the RFID is used in all the speed passes for your toll booth, like in Florida. It's a radio, an RFID chip in that thing, so they can track wherever you go, when you went through, what toll, and how much money was deducted out of your account. But they're not interested in that so much as they are knowing where you're going if they want to look for you. And not only that, but Richard, you and I have been up and down the interstate quite a few times, and even on the non-toll roads, we've noticed that there are RFID readers or something facing, down towards the road, the drivers, as if to, find out who's riding in what car or what's going on. Now, we know there's also the new RFIDs are going to be put in the new licenses. They're currently right now in every single new passport. All passports now have an RFID chip in them.
And now, here's an interesting thing. I was just reading the chat after I got done reading that, and as you were speaking, Doc DLB put on here, new cars have them in the valve stems to signal the car if your tire pressure is low. He is 100% correct on that. That has actually been going on for the last 4 years.
Right.
In Catherine's book, Spy Chips, she talks about Goodyear, Firestone, Michelin, they all put the RFID, they all put the RFID tags in the tires.
In the tires,
and,
right.
You know, so regardless, and here's the thing, I mean, you know, it's just, we're getting into a technology that's is highly concerning. You know, like, for instance, as it was saying in the end of the Wall Street Journal article, it was talking about to where, you know, you're going to have, you know, no checkout lines and pretty much nobody manning the checkouts. It's all going to be automatic. Well, there's only a couple ways of doing that, either having the RFID chips and credit cards, having the RFID or setting up for your cell phone, or, hey, how about the great and handy convenient way of putting a microchip in your body? You know, and that it's only a matter
right.
of time. I mean, this ties into exactly, I don't know if people have noticed back last fall, GE was pushing big time for this microchip technology in one of their commercials. There was a particular commercial I'm talking about where a man is in his doctor's office talking to the doctor, complaining about a couple issues that he has going on. And the doctor goes, well, I'd like to turn around and run, you know, it was a specific test that he wanted to run. And all of a sudden you hear in the background, I did that, it was already done, you know, 3 years ago, and then the test came up negative. And the doctor turns around, and the guy turns around, and you see this whole audience of all the doctors that the guy's ever been to in the past. And the way GE was pushing it is, wouldn't it be great if your doctor had everything set at an instant, everything at his fingertips at an instant? And
right.
Next thing they show in that commercial is they start showing about that technology. They call it the smart chip technology is what they call it. So, you know, like I said, I mean, they're saying, you know, years away. No, I'm saying by 2012, a good portion of this is going to be implemented. There's no doubt in my mind.
It's Richard. You're right. This is something, you know, and Dr. Albrecht will really, I'm sure, give us the inside scoop next Wednesday. It's, you know, one thing that I learned from her when she was down here in West Palm Beach several years ago when I first met her, was she talked about the Internet of Things. And by the way, she's the one that turned me on to the IBM and the Holocaust, and of course to. Black, you know, the author Black, who is just incredible. The books that he's written are Edwin Black. The books he's written are they're basically books on facts. He's gone and done extensive research into, of course, corporations and their involvement in war, and it's really frightening. And so we have to be suspect at all times of all government and all corporations and what they're doing. This brings up me
Absolutely.
Up to something that I saw several days ago that's really disturbed me. Now, I don't know if it has anyone else, but it disturbed me. And actually, from reading some of the comments that have been left on Daily Paul. I can see other people are disturbed by it also, and that is that Jeb Bush has thrown his hat in to help Rand Paul at a private fundraiser in Kentucky at the private home of these wealthy folks in Mockingbird Valley neighborhood in eastern Jefferson County. And they're going to have traditional tiers of Republican or political fundraisers. And it says here, a group of Kentucky activists plan a protest outside. That doesn't matter. But the thing is, it's $1,000 a plate. They expect 100 people to be at this fundraiser. So he's going to raise Jeb Bush is going to help Rand Paul raise $100,000. And now they're also saying that the support of Jeb Bush could be a double-edged sword for Paul, who rode to a GOP primary victory by bucking the establishment, of course, like his dad, but has since cozied up to the establishment, including Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and now Bush. At the same time, Bush's embrace could help Paul's credibility among traditional Republicans who might be unconvinced about the Bowling Green eye doctor. I guess he's from Bowling Green. Is that Ohio or Kentucky, Richard? Do you know?
I
thought Bowling Green was in Ohio.
No, Bowling Green is in Kentucky. Green's in Kentucky, yeah, northern Kentucky.
It appears that Paul is benefiting from the fundraising prowess of GOP philanthropist Kathy Bailey, the former U.S. ambassador to Latvia under President George W. Bush, has not been formally named finance chair of the Paul campaign, but is providing a critical link for Paul to more traditional Republicans. Now, we all have to remember that an ambassadorship appointed by any president is a payoff. I don't know how many people understand that, but when a president gets elected to office, one way he pays people off for supporting him and doing things for him is to appoint them as an ambassador to a foreign country, because basically he can do that and no one can tell him he can't. So that's a real payoff for them, and they go and they get, of course, incredible funds, money, financing, trips, and everything. So, but anyway, this is from the Daily Paul website. You know, I'm not reading something from the Constitution Party or from anyone else. This is from Daily Paul, written by Joe Arnold of Daily Paul, and he's written this, you know, this article here, and he's pretty. And again, going in and reading a lot of the comments. People are kind of up in arms about this. They're afraid. You know, what's going on here with this so-called liberty hero, Rand Paul? Is he jumping in bed with the traditional Republicans? If he does, is he going to be able to resist what they're going to have to offer him, let's say? How many others have we seen that have come to this point and all of a sudden, you know, they have a compromise? We've seen it with a lot of other former, what we thought were outsiders, who all of a sudden are now on the inside. And I think Lindsey Graham of South Carolina would be one of those. And of course, the list goes on and on. I remember when Jimmy Carter was running for president, and he was just that peanut farmer from Georgia. And all of a sudden, one day he was the governor of Georgia, a peanut farmer. And the next thing you know, he's having dinner with the Rockefeller family. So it's kind of interesting how this is all coming about. I personally, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm personally very, very suspect.
Well, anytime anybody starts to get in bed with the elitists, which I'm sorry, Jeb Bush is part of the Bush family, whether you disagree with his politics, whatever. You know, he's still part of that family, and with Rand Paul having him come there to help him raise money, that's like selling your soul to the devil, in my opinion.
Richard, think about this. Let's say if you were running for governor of Florida, okay, and knowing what you know now, believing how what you believe in right now, let's say you were running for the governorship of Florida, and all of a sudden they saw that, you know, you were actually really a favorite of a lot of people, of the patriot community, and they said, okay, all of a sudden here we all are, we're supporting Richard, and Richard's going full steam ahead and everything, and all of a sudden we find out, and this is exactly what they did with the Tea Parties. Remember this. This is exactly what they did. They do with their adversary. They go and they take them over. And let's say all of a sudden we found out, or let's say they came to you, Richard, and said, okay, look at the Bush, you know, Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida, Richard, he wants to come to the fundraiser and help you make money to win your election. You know, seriously, what are you going to say? I mean, what are you going to say to him?
Well, I know, and the thing about it is, I mean, come and think about this, too. He says no, and I'm you make up a good point and kind of playing devil's advocate with it, because I think he is, deep down in his mind, he is a good guy. He says no. What are the repercussions going to be to that? Because you know they're going to do everything in their power after that to undermine what he does or to make sure he does not get elected. But now,
right.
you know, you look at the aspect, well, here, we'll come and help you. We'll help you get elected. But after you're elected, there's things that you need to do for us. Now,
mm-hmm.
you know, you brought up a very good point, too, when it comes to the Tea Party movement. I will say this. There are a lot of great people out there that are involved in the Tea Party movement. The Tea Party movement has really gotten a lot of people that would not generally be active to be active. However, the ones
right.
I am very suspect of are the leaders of the different Tea Party movements. Those
yeah.
are the ones that I question, because a lot of times the original leaders of those are pushed out by the Republican Party. They're pushed out. The Republican Party gets their person in, and those people are no longer relied upon to organize the group. And they come in saying, here, we'll help you organize. We'll help you organize. And most people are like, oh, great. You know, here, help me organize. Then once they get them organized, they're like, oh, we don't need you anymore. You know, we got all these great people now. And a perfect example is I know that's exactly what happened with a friend of ours that lives up in South Carolina. You know, he was involved with a group. He was in with the leadership of that particular Tea Party movement, and got pushed aside. It's happened everywhere.
Right.
It's happened big time down here in South Florida. And I also go back.
Yeah.
You know how you were saying about you know, there's going to have to be payoffs and everything like that after you get elected. Perfect example of is look at Scott Brown up in Massachusetts.
Right.
What a great win that was for the Tea Party movement. Yeah, right. Look at his voting record so far in the Senate. That's not a win for the Tea Party movement, if you ask me.
No, that's actually a win for the dark side, because you know, we're already in we've already lost so much freedom in this country. It's not funny. And by the way, that brings me up to the second half of our show at 8 o'clock. Of course. I know most of you already know, because you received the email, that we're going to have on Daniel. And Daniel is going to be on and talk about Matt Hart. And listen, this is really exciting, Richard, because this video, they got 1.7 million hits on their website in 13 days. 1.7 million hits. And Daniel Blackburn, it's his website. And by the way, I talked to him. He has KCCN.TV, Richard. And I talked to him about putting American Politics 101 on KCCN.TV. And we're going to be talking to him about that. So he's very interested. And Yeah, that's really good news. And if you go there and you just, you know, you look at their mission statement and what they're about. This guy is he's really an incredible guy, Daniel. And I was telling him about some other things, you know, how we worked, some of the people we've had on our program, some of the famous people. And he was like, wow, that's really great, and excited and interested. And I told him, you know, about Senator Nancy Schaefer, and it was really great. But so I just want to make sure that everybody sticks around, or if you know of anyone. Now, this is all going to be about the Second Amendment rights, or the Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights. We're going to be discussing that and how these sheriffs are violating it and actually conspiring to plot against your rights and violate your rights by conspiring together to lie and create false evidence. So this is a really big case that happened out in California. We would have actually Matt Hart probably would have come on the program, but he just got a huge law firm to take his case, and they said for right now they just want him to keep his mouth closed. So that's why he can't come on, but he will eventually come on the program. But this is a huge – I posted this on my Facebook site. We probably need to get this up on American Politics 101, Richard, and get this up there so that we can – people can go there and watch this, you know. And when Daniel comes on tonight, we'll ask him more about that, and we'll link his site here to ours so people can go there and see what's going on here, because these guys are really exposing. This is really amazing. And what they did, think about that, 1.7 million hits. It's gone worldwide.
Wow.
It's gone into 94 countries came to his website, 94 different countries to watch that video. So if you think that that video is boring, forget it. The video is just unbelievable. But getting back to this, Jeb Bush supporting Rand Paul, I just have to say, bottom line, is that I'm very, very disturbed over it. I don't know. How can Rand Paul, how can you lay with dogs and not get fleas? I know Rand Paul's a good guy. I know his dad's a good guy. But when you start, this is what gets us in trouble is the compromising. You know what I'm saying? They start to, in order to get a little more money, I'll just go ahead and bend a little with these people. Before you know it, think about this. When Jesus went into the wilderness, he was tempted by Satan for 40 days, was it? And he was in the wilderness for 40 days. I know Richard is in the Richard Wilmot is in the chat room, and he's a pastor, ordained minister. He would probably know. I think it's 40 days and 40 nights he roamed the wilderness, and Satan came to him and tempted him with everything. Now, if Satan's going to tempt the Lord, I mean, do any of us really think he's not going to tempt us, in what we're doing? And think about Rand Paul. Think about what Rand Paul really represents. That's what's scary. He represents all of us, the patriot community. All the day after day we were doing this and fighting and trying to convince people to wake up and open up their minds to, what's really going on, to be open-minded and really start, researching, what happened with 9/11, the Federal Reserve, Kennedy being shot and killed, the bailouts, all this corruption, all this international corruption and corruption in this government. Rand Paul is like the hero that we're hoping is going to get in and start the change, the switch, going back and, let's see if we can, we can educate people in Congress and if they have enough integrity where they can actually honor their oath of office. And we expect Rand Paul, if anything, of course, all of us, to absolutely honor his oath of office, right? I mean, that's what we expect.
that's the biggest thing. You might as well say 99% of them don't even do that right now.
That's right. But a guy like Rand Paul, coming from the family, with his father being Ron Paul, we expect Rand Paul to be exactly like his father, a light in the darkness. And by the way, Ron Paul's a great guy, but Ron Paul is, and no man is the beginning and the end of liberty. Ron Paul, praise the Lord, was able to wake people up because he got some airtime, because he got in the race. If Ron Paul would have never jumped in the race, the presidential race, half of America probably wouldn't, half the people that are awake right now probably wouldn't be awake. But just because he was able to get on there, see, the news media is so powerful that, take a look at, what's her name, Oprah Winfrey. She brings somebody on her show, and the next thing, that person is a multimillionaire and famous worldwide. That's the power of the media. Now, we know that if a guy like Dr. Chuck Baldwin would have been able to get on and debate in the presidential debates, that or if he would have been invited like Obama was on the Oprah Winfrey show, if everyone was given equal chance, things would be completely different, completely different. But the problem is that the sheep, they get all their information from one source, and that source has been co-opted, taken over, hijacked, whatever you want to call it, by the enemy. So Rand Paul's now invited the enemy, because the Bush family is the enemy of liberty, no doubt about that. He's now invited them in in like a partnership, and I got to tell you, I'm disturbed. I'm very disturbed. I don't know what else to say about it. I'm just very disturbed about it. Really, I'm heartbroken over it, to be honest with you. It breaks my heart. Here's the one guy, Rand Paul, we thought was going to go in there, pull out a sword and start lobbing heads off. And now what's he going to do? Go to lunch? Let's compromise? Compromise is what's gotten us into this situation. And again, we can go to God's holy word. We can say, where does the Lord tell us to compromise in here? He doesn't. He said, stand for truth, even if it costs you your life. Somebody's saying in the chat room that I can talk with Rand Paul if I'd like. I'll give him a call. Maybe I will. Maybe that's a good idea. Maybe we should have Rand Paul come on the program and explain to us why he is embracing enemies like Jeb Bush. Now, maybe he doesn't consider Jeb Bush to be the enemy. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't look at the Bush family like we do. I know how I view the Bush family. Demonic. I don't think there's any other way I can view them after what they've done. And after finding out, you know, the secret societies they belong to, all the evil laws they've passed, you know, the Bush family, this last president we had, we haven't had a president since then, by the way. I looked at him, every time I saw him, and it was like looking at a demon. Every time I looked at him, I don't know, just something about him. Does anybody else feel that way? I felt like I was looking at a demon when I looked at George Bush, our last president. Just that look in his eyes, something about him. And of course, Richard, then your mom
right.
sent me that YouTube that Barbara Bush, her father is Aleister Crowley. Remember
yep.
we talked about that last week?
Yep.
Now, that just floored me because obviously Aleister Crowley was Lucifer incarnate, if you will. I don't know if that's saying it right, but he was definitely Lucifer in the flesh because he had communed with Lucifer, you know. And as the Lord says, our God, he says, if you are mine, you know, you will become one with us. And so that's communing with him, communing with his Holy Spirit. Well, you can commune with the dark side also. I don't know. You know, I think about this, and I think all of us need to ask ourselves a question. We were in Rand Paul's shoes, and Jeb Bush came and helped us raise funds. Now, we know that there's limitless amounts of money and power. Once the insiders accept you in, they have control of all the money and a lot of power. What man is able to resist that? I would be afraid of myself, to be honest with you. I really would. I mean, it's too tempting. And what man can stand up against that? Is any man really strong enough to stand up against that? I don't know. Have men in the past stood up against it? I'm sure that they have. But it would worry me. Just like I read in the Word that it says even the elect will be deceived, I am frightened over that. I think, man, then I certainly don't feel like the elect. So does that mean that I'll be deceived also? But kind of, I think if we go to the source of all wisdom, all knowledge, and all truth, I think that we can find the answer there. And I'll really be interested in knowing. And maybe that's what we need to do, Richard, you know, for our listening audience. Maybe we need to actually go and you and I and call up Rand Paul and say, look, we want to have a heart-to-heart talk with you here. What are you doing? You think you're going to be strong enough to stand up against this? So, I don't know, you want to throw something in there, Richard? Because I'm just kind of like speechless at this moment. I know it's terrible to be on internet radio and be speechless, but I'm just really, you know, we're not professionals, right, Richard? We're just two American guys that are concerned about our country that are just trying to wake some people up. I don't know, you know, have we woken anyone up? Probably. And I'm sure that we can wake more people up or you know, at least lead them to this, lead them to become their own investigators. That's the one thing we really want to do. Don't take our word for it, right, Richard? Go look it up yourself.
Exactly. And, you know, speaking of going and looking it up yourself, you know, not just only speaking of that YouTube video, but here's a little interesting information in regard to Aleister Crowley and with him being the father of Barbara Bush. This is just a little bit of an article that I found, you know, as you were standing there, as you were sitting there talking. I'm going to just read through this very quickly. Pauline Pierce, who was the mother of Barbara Bush, was friends with Aleister Crowley, maybe more than friends. Pauline had a reputation of being a bit on the wild side in the 20s. It's been reported that she and Alistair were in France together around September through October of 1924. Upon return to America and her boyfriend here, Pauline gave birth to Barbara Pierce. Fearing retaliation from James I, that the Pierces changed their name from Percy to hide from their involvement in the Gunpowder Plot of 1605, starring Thomas Percy, Robert Catesby, and, of course, Guy Fawkes, the Fall Guy. We actually get the word Guy from Guy Fawkes. He was also known as Guido, but I digress. The Gunpowder Plot was designed to make James I of biblical fame harsher on the Catholics, for he was the target of all that gunpowder. With a few plot twists, Lord Robert Cecil, the Earl of Salisbury, and Venetian intelligence counselor to James informed him of the plot. Cecil was behind the plot. Guy Fawkes took the fall. He was the Timothy McVeigh of his time. Now, everybody knows who Timothy McVeigh is. For those of you that believe it would make an impact to dress as this patsy, it would do better to use your own imagination rather than that provided by the magician's wand. Even now, few understand that plot. Guy was no fox, but a dupe ensnared by the chief minister himself in a madcap scheme to blow up king and parliament. The real plot was worldly successful to invent a pretext for war with Spain. This fraud was the foundation of the British Empire. What a surprise. Even back then, they were doing things to have justification of wars. Fox was discovered and arrested during a raid on the cellar in the early morning of the 5th of November. Catesby and Percy were cut down in the process and killed on the spot. Guy was immediately taken to the Tower of London and tortured over the next few days after special permission to do so had been granted by the king. On the 31st of January, Fox and a number of others implicated in the conspiracy were tried in Westminster Hall, and after being found guilty, were taken to Old Palace Yard in Westminster in St. Paul's Yard, where they were hanged, drawn, and quartered. Fox cheated this fate in a way. Though weakened by torture, he jumped from the gallows and snapped his neck rather than being hanged until almost dead. Quite simply, all the fireworks that are celebrating the torture and execution of Mr. Fox, who along with others, with several other Catholics, aspired to blow up Parliament or did they? It seems that the gunpowder was corn powder and would not have exploded. The hidden hand was behind the works, and the Wizard of Oz is Lord Robert Cecil, the Earl of Salisbury, in the Venetian intelligence. Venice needed England to war with Spain to keep the money rolling in. What a surprise. They were the CIA of their day, so why did I start this with Pauline Pierce, you ask? Pauline Pierce, after sexcapades with Aleister Crowley, gave birth to Barbara Pierce, who became Barbara Bush, who gave birth to none other than George W. Bush, Aleister's grandson. Barbara Pierce is a descendant of President Franklin Pierce Sr., not a Freemason, who is a descendant of Thomas Percy, who tried to blow up the Parliament and King James I. Franklin Pierce lost favor over wanting to keep slavery alive and was replaced by James Buchanan, a Freemason, who is a descendant of James I, and both James are accused of being, and both him and James are accused, who is a descendant of James I, and both James Buchanan and James I are accused of being homosexual. So that's just a little article. It kind of went in through a little bit of history, and I could see what the writer was getting at when he was talking about George W. Bush, because look at the two wars that he perpetrated by using what a lot of our listeners believe was a false flag event. There's a lot of questions on, in regards to 9/11, which brings me up to another point. As you were saying earlier, you need to question your government, which I agree with wholeheartedly. And the people in where I have a big time problem with some of the people in the Tea Party movement is they're questioning the government now as to everything that's going on. They're questioning, the spending, all this, crazy spending, any bill that passes or anything like that. But they agree and believe with the report that came out about 9/11. Why do you question the government on certain things and not question them on everything? If you're suspectable of one thing the government does, why aren't you suspect of everything? That's what I don't understand. And it's a perfect example of where people take things at face value and not doing their own research. There's a lot of things in that don't add up. Plain and simple, there's a lot of things in there that really do not add up. If people would just take the time, I read the 9/11 Commission report. I have the book. It doesn't add up. And they've even come out and said a number of things in the 9/11 Commission report are inaccurate. But people tend to go back and say, well, the 9/11 Commission report explains everything. No, it doesn't. Especially when they come around and say there's inaccuracies in it. So why do people take I get frustrated with that because we start talking like this, we're called a truther. Well, you know what? I'm sorry. I take that label with pride. I want to know the truth. I want to know the truth about everything. So why, chastise and call people truthers for wanting to know the truth? They're lying to themselves, plain and simple. And I'm sorry. I'll get off my soapbox now.
No, it's okay. That's true. You know, Aleister Crowley, by the way, of course, was a Freemason. And
yes.
He was part of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which was a magical order in Great Britain. And it's what's influenced occultism now in the Western, United States. As we hear people say that they believe in Wicca and Thelema and they believe in all these other Eastern cults, but very much in the Masonic lodges. The Golden Dawn system was based on hierarchy and initiation like the Masonic lodges. And then Aleister Crowley created another organization, actually, called the Latin word was Argentium Astrum. And in English, it means angel and abyss. It was a magical order that Aleister Crowley, he created in 1907 after leaving the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. It's known as a Thelemic Magic Fraternity. And, of course, we know that the Bushes, look at Daddy Bush, Skull and Bones. These guys are deeply entrenched in all of this satanic garbage here. What is it out there that Alex Jones exposed out there? That owl, the Bohemian Grove. Take a look at the Bohemian Grove and the people that visit out to the Bohemian Grove and what they do out there. But Aleister Crowley was really influential in the Freemasons, and he was really known as he wrote some interesting things there and wrote about. Who exposes this a lot is Gary Kaa. In Route to Global Occupation, Gary Kaa exposes this, lot of this, and about how he wrote, and their God is Lucifer. We have to remember that. That's what he's saying. That's what Aleister Crowley said. Their God is actually Lucifer, the angel, the fallen angel of light, the light bearer, Lucifer. And we have to be careful with this stuff because we can so easily be deceived. Now, if I was Rand Paul, I would be terrified that I was going to be deceived. I don't know. Maybe he knows something I don't know. He probably does. I'm sure he's had a lot more exposure to a lot more things than I have, of course, with his dad being a congressman. But it just frightens me. And I would certainly hate to see that family all of a sudden, fall, or all of a sudden we find Rand Paul gets in and he's chummy and he buddy-buddy with all the insider Republicans. That would be heartbreaking to all of us, I think.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of Aleister Crowley, for some of our listeners that might not be aware of who he is, I just went on the Wikipedia page and I'm going to just read the first two paragraphs here real quick. Aleister Crowley was born October 12, 1875, died December 1, 1947. Born Edward Alexander Crowley, and also known as both Frater I can't pronounce that, and the Great Beast, was an influential English occultist, mystic, and ceremonial magician, responsible for founding the religious philosophy of Thelema. He was a member of the Esoteric Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and was also a co-founder of the AA, which it's not Alcoholics Anonymous, it's something different, and eventually leader of the...
That's Angel and Abyss. That's Angel and Abyss. That's what that is.
Exactly. Angel and Abyss. And eventually a leader of the Ordo Templi or Orientis. He is known today for his magical writings, especially the Book of Law, the central sacred text of Thelema, although he also wrote widely on other subjects, including a large amount of fiction and poetry. Crowley was also a hedonist, bisexual, recreational, drug experimental, and social critic. Many of these roles, he was in revolt against the moral and religious values of his time, espousing a form of libertinism based upon the rule of do what thou wilt. Because of this, he gained widespread notoriety during his lifetime and was denounced in the popular press of the day, the wickedest man in the world. Alongside his historic activities, he was an avid chess player, mountaineer, poet, playwright, and it has also been alleged that he was a spy for the British government. So that's just a little bit of information. Oh, boy. This is a little scary. In 2002, a BBC poll described Crowley as being the 73rd greatest Briton of all time.
Right.
Whilst he has influenced and been referenced by numerous writers, musicians, and filmmakers, including, excuse me, this is a little scary, including Alan Moore, Ozzy Osbourne, The Beatles, Iron Maiden, Jimmy Page, David Bowie, Kenneth Anger, L. Ron Hubbard. We all know who L. Ron Hubbard is.
Yep.
The creator of Scientology. Timothy Leary, Robert Ant Wilson, John Frusciante, Danny Carey, and Harry Everett Smith. He has also been cited as a key influence on many later historic groups and individuals, including figures like Kenneth Grant, Gerald Gardner, and to some degree, Austin Osman Spare. So I cannot believe that he was considered, you know, the 73rd greatest Briton of all time. That's scary.
But it's typical.
What's that?
It's typical.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, it's typical. That's I'm putting a link into the chat room, folks. You need to go take a look at Aleister Crowley's picture and tell me if that doesn't look like Barbara Bush. Exactly like her.
And also, you know, while you're going there, you could click on a couple of the things. If you click on Thelema, and you look at the star that is used, it's one of the satanic stars, plain and simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's a common symbol of the Thelema. You know, and then if you the Book of Law. The Book of Law, you might as well say, the Book of Law, Liberal Vel Legis, is what he calls the book. It's the first true satanic book that was ever written. I'm saying he's the father of modern day Satanism.
Yeah.
Because he put on here, yeah, Crowley claims that the author.
Richard, are you on? I think we lost you. Or did I lose connection?
Crowley claims that the author was an entity named Awas, whom he later referred to as his personal Holy Guardian Angel. And, you know, you click on AWOS, and I'm trying to find out exactly what, you know, AWOS stands for, but, you know, I can't quite find it. But anyways, you know, just, I mean, that's something. I mean, he goes back, and he was in high belief of Egyptian mysticism.
Yeah.
He followed Egyptian mysticism big time. So.
Yep. He was also a student of the Kabbalah.
Yes. Yep.
All mysticism and magic and all evil. Everything that God tells us in the Word to stay away from. Stargazers, you know, all these fortune tellers. This is what Aleister Crowley, what he was in deeply, deeply involved in. And it's kind of scary. Again, you know, if you go look at that picture, I pasted in the site, the link to where the picture is. Barbara Bush, now you know where she gets her looks from. It's
yeah.
Really frightening.
It's very scary. You know, and just a little, you there? Just a little, one last thing on Aleister Crowley. In the book, there's a little quote in here that I found. The voice of the eighth heir says, "My name is called AWOS, and in the book of the law did I write the secrets of truth that are like unto a star and a snake and a sword." Crowley says this later manifestation took the form of a pyramid of light.
Yeah.
So,
pyramid of light.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Wow. I'll tell you, you try to talk to some people about this stuff, though, and they look at you like you're talking Greek or something. They don't want to hear it. I said something to someone the other day, Richard, about, how do we, I don't know, we can really wake up any more people in this country. What are you going to wake them up to, number one? You know, you're going to wake them up to Glenn Beck? They can start watching Glenn Beck or get co-opted by the enemies that are already there because they control everything, all information. And, you know, you go try to tell somebody about, why don't they do a special on television in connecting Barbara Bush to her father, Aleister Crowley? I mean, you never hear her talking about it, do you? You never hear the family mentioning anything about it. It's like no one talks about it. It's just like no one talks about what happens to children, you know, in this country. And you know doggone well that guys like Aleister Crowley were involved in that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know that. No doubt about it.
Yeah, you bring up a good point when you turn around and say that, you know, it's trying to wake up more people in this country. It's gotten to the point now, in my honest opinion, and I hate to say it, that the people that have already, the people that are awake now is practically all that is going to wake up. And the reason why I say that is because those are the free thinkers out there, the ones that can think for themselves. The rest of the country is just sleepwalking and brainwashed. We're living in a society, in a country that's completely dumbed down. When you have people that rather care about American Idol, John and Kate Plus 8, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, or this newest one that I love, is there is going to be a rally in multiple cities across. I mean, how much more, pardon my French, but how much more ridiculous and asinine can you get? You know, it's gotten to the point where it's just, like I said, I mean, and I agree, Whitney, 1941, we can't stop trying, you're right. We can't stop trying or else we're part of the problem. But I'm just saying, I mean, until people actually take it upon themselves to look up the information for themselves, it's like talking to brick walls. But it's one of those things, too, that I firmly believe that there are people out there that you can wear them down. Keep talking to them, keep talking to them, keep talking to them, and eventually they'll wear down and start to look up the stuff themselves. So, and I just was told that Dan got cut off. So, okay, now he's back on.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay. I don't know if how much what you heard of what I was saying. I didn't hear anything
because.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say I didn't hear anything, Richard, because I'm listening to the program also on my phone.
Uh-huh.
I have my computer on, then I get a double feed, you know, so I have my volume off completely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, what I was saying is, you know, I was talking about the, you know, in my firm belief that the people that that have woken up in this country were about at the tipping point as to how many people are going to wake up, because they're the free thinkers, the independent thinkers,
right.
The people that think for themselves. The rest of the country is the sheeple, the brainwashed, you know, the sleepwalkers that are more prone to focus on, American Idol, America's Got Talent, John and Kate Plus 8, and then my favorite thing, which I wanted you to hear, that next week there's going to be multiple rallies in different cities across the country to free Lindsay Lohan.
Okay.
You know,
is that right?
So, yeah. So, I mean, again, if people are more concerned about that, you could clearly see how much of a problem that we have in this country.
Right, right. Well, you know, Richard, it's like going on to YouTube and watching the top videos, and all the top videos are all about junk.
Yeah.
Right?
Dog saying, I love you.
Yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
don't get me wrong, it's cute, but come on, people.
Yeah.
You know?
It's crazy stuff, you know. It really is. It's disgusting. Well, I'm hoping that let's see here, that Daniel will be calling in here. Well, actually, he might be on already.
Daniel may
be on. I see we have a call. Are you here, Daniel?
I'm here. Is anybody listening? I'm here.
You bet we are. We're definitely listening, and we've been looking forward to having you come on. Everybody, I'd like to introduce you to Daniel J. Blackburn of KCCN. TV. Welcome to American Politics 101, Daniel.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on, and like to thank you for keeping the message alive that our freedoms are under assail from within.
Thank you very much. And by the way, my partner here is Richard Service. And Richard, you want to say hello to Daniel?
Hello, Daniel, and thank you for coming on. And I was taking a look at your website just here briefly, and I really like it. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you had to say.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. This was quite an experience, I must admit. It's been a topsy-turvy 13 days since I posted this particular video as the initial effort of my new website, which is KCCN.TV, which you guys were very kind to mention.
You bet. Now, Daniel, let's start from the beginning here, because I'm really interested myself. I know Richard is. And Richard, you know, of course, if you have any questions, jump right in. What brought you, how did you find out about this case?
Let me just rattle on for a minute here, okay?
Okay, you bet. You bet. Go ahead.
Yeah, here's kind of what happened. Well, here's what did happen. First of all, I'm in San Luis Obispo County, which is in central California, equidistant between San Francisco and Los Angeles on Highway 101. So we've become kind of it's a very beautiful county, so we've become kind of a locale for people of means from both L.A. and San Francisco. And as a result, what we've got in this county, to a large degree, are a whole lot of people who are professional people who don't spend a whole lot of time here. And the folks who are here are either young people trying to survive in a very, very difficult financial environment here, or older retired people. So as a result, you've got a very small group of people paying much attention to what's going on in the county. Now, I don't think that's terribly different, probably, from lots of other places in the United States. There is a tendency, I think, on the part of all of us to kind of get involved with our own thing and hope that local government is dealing with itself and doing the right thing. I've been a reporter for a long time. I've been in this county for about 15 years. I have a fairly good reputation. So as a result of that, I got a phone call about four or five months ago from Matt Hart, the man who introduced himself as Matt Hart. And his first question to me was, what do you think of the Second and Fourth Amendments? Which I thought was kind of a strange question, but I said, hey, I'm all in favor of them. But he went on to tell me that people had told him that I'm the guy he should call because I've done a lot of investigative work here in the county. I've spent a lot of time developing stories that are a little bit larger than the local daily would ever handle. I was news editor of the weekly here, New Times, for a number of years, and we broke story after story that was not being handled in the county. So anyway, as I got on in years here, it's occurred to me that there's not a whole lot of business left for old writers in the newspaper and magazine end of things, so I wanted to develop this video-based news website. Just about the time I was beginning to formulate it, Matt Hart came along and he said, I've got this problem, happened a couple years ago, but he said, still causing me a lot of grief. And I said, what is it? And he starts telling me, again, this was on the telephone, about an encounter he had with the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department. And it was a completely outrageous story. He was telling me things about what these deputies had done. They entered his house without a warrant, broken into a gun safe without a warrant, confiscated all of his legally registered weapons, knives, other miscellaneous things they found around the house. But anyway, he was telling me this story, and I was thinking, boy, I've heard this before, you know, here we go again. But again, what are you going to do? And about 15 minutes into the conversation, he says, yeah, he said that right on the tape. And I said, what tape are you talking about? He said, oh, I've got tapes of the arrest of the entire incident, 5.5 hours. And I said, wow, can I have those? He said, sure. So I took the tapes from him, and for the next, well, probably 2 or 3 months, I was simultaneously logging scenes from these tapes, enhancing the sound, getting the sound up and being able to hear everything that was said appropriately, learning a software program to build my documentary, learning it at the same time. So I had one ally that was terrific. I had time, and unfortunately a lot of media these days don't have that kind of time. I was able to spend entire days, entire blocks of weeks at a time, listening to these tapes, isolating the pertinent comments, talking to people about the true meaning of these things, trying to make sure I didn't take anything out of context. So I listened to these tapes, and I called Matt back, and I said, Matt, this is absolutely incredible. I've heard stories like this all my life as a reporter, and I've never actually been able to listen in on what is truly a conspiracy by police or by law enforcement to make a case, to fabricate evidence, to unlawfully confiscate weapons, to justify their breaking and entering into a house and into a locked gun safe. It was incredible. So I have put together, over a period of time, a 22-minute documentary in which a good portion of it is the actual voices of these deputies on scene.
Right.
And it was fairly easy to draw a straight line between their arrival at this man's house and the commission of what I would consider to be a whole laundry list of felonies against a man who himself was then charged with a bunch of bogus felonies just to justify the deputy's unlawful search and seizure.
Right.
It was pretty intense. So anyway, that was the storyline that I set out with. So I went online on the what the heck was it here, about the 12th, 13th of this month, 14th of this month, and it's been gaining a lot of attention. It's a subject matter that people should be concerned about, and I'm very gratified that people are paying attention to it and responding to it.
Well, you received 1.7 million hits plus in 13 days.
Isn't that incredible?
That's absolutely astounding.
I had to put my statistics over to a couple of computer people to make sure I wasn't reading them wrong. They said, no, there's no way you can read those wrong. That's what they say.
Wow. I have to tell you.
Hold.
Pardon me?
Take hold. I said it did take hold.
It did take hold.
I don't think those numbers even include the YouTube hits. A number of people put it on YouTube, and I think those have gotten tens of thousands of hits too. Those aren't even included in my site statistics. So I must admit, I'm kind of an old print reporter, so this happening like this is pretty astounding to me. And it's also very, as they say, very gratifying that a lot of people all over the world are concerned about our diminishing, our eroding civil liberties and our constitutional freedoms.
Absolutely. I know I have to tell you that I put the YouTube videos up on my Facebook site. And, let's see here. Well, the one part three here, which is the last of them, it has 8,500 hits. But sometimes we know that those YouTube, I've heard, fidgets with the numbers sometimes.
Well,
and
this is they have things called robot dialers or things like that. A lot of different goofy stuff. My site separates all of that stuff, and it shows it at the bottom, and it just throws them out completely out of the numbers that I'm getting.
Right.
I think what made this interesting was that it caught hold here in California with a group called CalGuns, and they have a forum, CalGuns.net.
Yeah.
And several people here in San Luis Obispo County who are members, I guess, of CalGuns, saw the video, forwarded it on, and that group just went off. It was absolutely amazing. I've never seen anything like it. They have, I don't know, they must have 100 or more links to other gun organizations and similar groups in America, all over across the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it went out like lightning overnight. I mean, it was, I look at my stats and I can see there was virtual silence right up to about the day after I put it online, and then it just shot up. Man, it was something. So people were really interested in the message, and I think that's the important issue. People are really concerned that these things are happening more and more. I didn't have anybody say to me, oh, that's just an aberration, that sort of thing. It might happen, but it doesn't happen that often. I'm sorry. Everybody that I talked to who had any knowledge of it, particularly law enforcement, said you'd be surprised how often that sort of thing happens. And usually nobody ever gets caught because usually these cops aren't stupid enough to talk into these microphones quite like this.
Right, right. So what you're saying is that law enforcement said this happens more often than you realize?
I think that's absolutely a fact. I mean, I could tell by the casual way that these people, these deputies were talking, that this was not a new adventure for them. They weren't doing something new, exciting, and illegal that was new to them. You know, this was kind of the daily routine. And I think one of the things that struck me most when I was watching the tapes was that nobody, none of the other, and there probably were seven or eight deputies, detectives, and supervisors at the scene here, but God knows what for. But not one of these people said to Murphy, who wasn't even the senior supervising deputy there, by the way, none of them said to him, what the hell's going on here? What are we doing this for? That's what stunned me. I come from a world where people generally, young people are encouraged to, speak up and get involved and try to take over the conversations. And for this to be... these guys were aware they were breaking the law. It wasn't like they were, lying to their wives or something. Yeah, this was serious law-breaking stuff. And I think if you look at it closely, probably all felonies. I mean, these are cops committing felonies and treating it rather cavalierly. Another thing that struck me was that there were numerous times when you listened at the tapes where you could actually hear a conversation start, and then suddenly the sound would be muffled. Obviously, somebody was putting their hand over a microphone. And then there would be kind of a scratchy silence for a while. And then you'd hear the hand kind of, you know, raspy taking off the microphone. And then a statement would be made. But often the statement that was on tape was just outrageous to begin with. And I had to wonder what was said before, for God's sakes.
Right,
and these
right.
guys aren't supposed to be doing that. I mean, I got a copy of the policies and procedures from the Sheriff's Department regarding their use of the tapes. And nowhere in it did I see that they could arbitrarily, at their discretion, put their hand over the microphone to blot out certain parts of the conversation. So they knew that some things they were doing were wrong. I'm just surprised at how bold they were in saying what they did say onto the microphones.
Well, you know, Daniel, what really bothered me more than anything, I have to say, after watching this entire documentary that you did. By the way, you did a great job on it, you know, so I want to congratulate you on that. And I think it's amazing that you put this all together yourself. But the one thing
Army of One.
Yeah, Army of One, which really would show you that, you know, one person can make a difference, right? And but the one thing that really frightened me, that bothered me and concerned me more than anything is, you know, this guy is on his own property, right? Matt Hart is on his own property. He's target practicing on his own property, way out in it looks like farm country. They never mentioned that, you know, you can't there's no law there that says you can't discharge a firearm here.
Absolutely not.
They were trying to.
There were hunters in his area that morning. A couple guys went by on the back 40 shooting doves. So.
Okay. All right. So.
So it's a common hunting area. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's. It's not like you can't discharge a firearm. So he's just out shooting, target practicing, and here these sheriffs show up, and of course in the video in your documentary you show how on the way they're already talking about what they're going to do on the way as they're going to his residence, knowing nothing about the situation really, other than shots fired. They're already planning on what they're going to do. Now, when they get there, now these cops, these sheriffs, and here's another frightening thing, folks, because just recently in Palm Beach County, the sheriff here in Palm Beach County just purchased 1,500 assault rifles, A2, military-style, fully automatic assault rifles, okay? 1,500. These sheriffs pull out of the trunk of their cars M16s, A2s. And they start yelling at him, and I mean, they're ready. If he makes one false move, they're ready to kill him instantly, shoot him. Like, I mean, that's what's scary, because they don't even know what he's done, and they're ready to kill him instantly.
Yep, and you hear the guns lock and load. I mean, it's a frightening moment. And
that's right. That's right. Now, what if they would have shot that guy? What if they would have shot Matt Hart? And no one would have gotten a hold of the tapes.
I never would have seen the tapes, and probably nobody else would have either. I mean,
that's right, and they would have committed murder and gotten away with it.
Long and hard to release the tapes, and then there's a fairly good chance that the tapes as released, if they were released, wouldn't be as they were when they were taken.
That's right.
We've got a corrupt little county here, but unfortunately, I think it's happening in a lot of places, and a lot of it has to do with a lack of sunshine, a lack of attention from the people.
Right. You've heard of Sheriff Richard Mack, correct? You know, he's the sheriff that took the Supreme, sued the United States about the Brady Law. And he was on our program, maybe 6 months ago. And, you know, that he said to us, he said the sheriff has the absolute ability to restore and save the Constitution in his county. And so you know what we did here, Daniel? We went to all 66 county sheriffs in the state of Florida, all 66 of them. I told you that I'm the chairman of the Constitution Party, and we went to the sheriffs. We said, look, you guys can restore the Constitution in your county. You know, you can keep the IRS from doing illegal search and seizures from people and things of that nature. I mean, you can really protect. Your job is to protect the people. And do you know that we did not get one sheriff who said that they would be willing to step forward and protect the Constitution. Not one.
Amazing. That is astounding.
Now, Sheriff Richard Mack wrote this beautiful 50-page short booklet on the county sheriffs restoring the Constitution in their counties, exactly how they could do it. You know, and here he is. He went all the way to the Supreme Court. He won his case, and he's saying this is what you need to do. It's a beautiful little book, and the sheriffs all received one in our state, and they would not support. They would not one of them would stand up and say, you know, I'll step forward and start organizing and getting the other sheriffs, or even step forward and make a public statement that I will support and protect and defend the Constitution. And just like Richard Mack did, they won't do it.
Yeah.
And in fact,
it is amazing. And we've got a sheriff's race going here where this particular issue is going to become an issue in the race.
Right, right. This issue of Matt Hart. Yeah.
Of constitutional protections, exactly. So it's.
I'll tell you something, Daniel. You know, you guys in that county right now, because of this extreme violation that is all documented, it's just amazing that you got your hands on this footage. I would be willing to be part of a team that will go door to door in that county, or go to gun shows, to home shows, and just play this over and over and over again to get people to see this. Because once you see this, you just you know, I have to tell you that my emotions, I was so angry. And again, the one thing I was more angry about than them stealing his guns from him was the fact that they were ready to kill him. That bothered me more than anything.
And, you know, there's another issue, too, which we haven't yet mentioned. The district attorney had full knowledge of these tapes. And the district attorney spent considerable time with the deputies preparing for the preliminary hearing that Matt faced so that they would be able to deal with, and I have no idea how they thought they were going to do it, but how they were going to deal with this issue of the unlawful, unwarranted break-in of the house and the safe. And the interesting thing, I thought, well, interesting isn't the right word. The depressing thing is that Matt's attorney, and he was a private attorney, had the tapes also, and decided for some unknown reason to raise the issue of the unlawful search after the preliminary hearing, after Matt had already been held to answer on two of the four charges he was originally charged with.
Really?
So I saw the entire legal system almost, if not equally, culpable to the sheriff in perpetuating this whole thing. And the reason they did it, and they made it tough on Matt Hart, was so that there wouldn't be an easy lawsuit. They saw the handwriting on the wall. They knew that these guys had stepped way over the limit, and this is what happened. So, you know, and another thing is these tapes were offered to the Daily newspaper here 2 years ago, and they had no time for it. They had no time to.
Really?
So,
wow.
So, I mean,
there you have it again, huh?
Well, it's good for me, you know, because if these guys were really good reporters, there wouldn't be any niche for an old guy like me. But since they're so bad,
right.
So bad, I got a chance.
Right, right, exactly. Well, you know, again, I think the sheriff should be charged with attempted murder. I mean, what happens if you or I point an assault rifle at a sheriff and tell him that if he moves, flinches, you're going to blow his brains out? You're going to end it right there. I mean, what would happen? We would be charged with attempted murder, attempted. I mean, I can only imagine the 30 felonies they would charge us with for doing that.
Absolutely.
But yet these guys show up. Yeah. And here they show up this guy's property. He's got a locked front gate. His front gate is locked. They call him over. He comes over, and they immediately draw down on him. And threaten to kill him. And there again, you know, I guess that's just my I look at it as if I was in his shoes, and all of a sudden here I'm on my own property doing something I've done many times before, and I have lived on property, by the way, where I was able to shoot out my back door, you know, at targets and things, and I can't even imagine what would have happened if they would have come up and done that to me, and told me, you know, look at, you know, throw your gun up, put it down, don't move, we're going to shoot you, everybody's drawing down on you. You know, and of course, the good citizen that, you know, the good person that Matt Hart is, you know, he's like, wow, what's going on here, you know? So innocently.
Mm-hmm.
How many people have died?
It is interesting. I'm concerned, too, that more and more cops are being turned out now like this. I heard from a lot of older law enforcement guys, retired, who said that this never, ever would have happened in their day, because if they had tried it, their supervisor would have rammed their report right up their tail. You know, and they were afraid to do anything, and if it got past their supervisor, they figured the defense attorney would cut them apart in court, and the judge would chastise. You know, there was some fear of doing the wrong thing. There was some fear of, you know, they knew that it had a cost. Now they know it has no cost. I'm astounded. I'm looking at my chalkboard on which I put my future stories. And right on top of my list for next month is the district attorney here, because he has a history of taking actions that hurt innocent people and protect, I hate this term, but the establishment, the legal establishment, law enforcement establishment here in this county.
Sure.
So he's the next target. He is, to me, as culpable as any of them, because if the detectives knew, or if these cops knew that the district attorney was going to ask them, what the heck did they do with this? How do they expect him to prosecute a bad case like this? Then they wouldn't be bringing him these cases. Simple as that.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the thing is, again, you mentioned it. You know, you would think that the district attorney is supposed to stand for absolute truth. We would think, would say to them, you guys messed up, and you know what? I need to arrest you guys. I need to put you all under arrest.
Our district attorney stands for absolute conviction rate, and his only interest is in, when he boasts about it, a 99-point-something conviction rate. And this is how he does it. He loads people up with crimes they didn't commit, and then he lets them cop to a miserable misdemeanor or something. And he chalks up another one in the win column.
And that's why we have more people in prison. That's why we have more people in prison or in jails today in the United States than any other country.
You know, while I was researching for this particular documentary, I read a book by an former FBI agent. I wish I could remember the name of it. Something about being stupid gets you arrested or something. Or how to arrest or proof yourself, I think, was the title of it. And he said that a lot of people are arrested simply because they say or do something stupid, not illegal. So, you know, and there's no crime against that, but nevertheless, and it was an interesting chapter in which they discussed how much easier it is today than 10 years ago, for example, for an officer to make an arrest, and how much more motivated they are from a financial standpoint to make that arrest. It used to be kind of prudent and sometimes time-saving and labor-saving for a cop to, you know, maybe walk you up to your door if he found you a little tipsy. You know, you're the neighborhood gardener. Everybody knows you, you know. They were friendlier. But now it's okay. You're in the cuffs. You're arrested. And as soon as you're arrested, man, you know, you got bail money. You got lawyer money. You got time off work. You got all these other things, even if you beat the charge. So I think it's a crime how easily these officers levy crimes against people as though it's, you know, as though it's nothing. I wish Murphy would be charged with a crime just so he would see how it feels. But for him, it would be a legitimate charge, so he wouldn't be having quite the same feeling that Matt Hart had.
Right. Now, Murphy is the one of the police officers, the deputies, right?
Right. He was the lead deputy. Interestingly, 2 years prior to this incident, he had gotten his law degree here in California, so he's a member of the California Bar. Of all the deputies on the scene, he should have known the constitutional issues better than anybody, and perhaps he did. Maybe that's why he was so careful to try to craft a story to cover his actions.
Wow. Now we also just had someone in the chat room, Daniel. They said, you know, please be careful. I'm sure it's something you've thought about already, but they're asking you to please be careful because, you know, some of these people can be pretty sinister, especially when you start exposing them and, you know, things happen. So they just want me to pass
true.
That on to you.
tell that person I appreciate it. It's obviously a thought. However, I've been irritating law enforcement most of my professional career, and I've been threatened by some of the best of them, so I'm not too worried.
Right.
I think the further out on the point I get and the more public I become in my reporting, the safer I become. That may
right.
be stupid. You may be playing this tape back some day saying, remember when he said that. But,
well,
yeah.
And that's good. That right there, Daniel, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. The faster you report it, the less likely they are to come after you, because right when it's in your hands, as long as it's in your hands, you're more susceptible to the danger. But if you get it out there, then people are going to really question why you were attacked.
Exactly. There was one time, just quickly, I'll tell you, one time I was worried. I was reporting down in Southern California on some police officers in a department who had been for a number of years cheating on their overtime. And it was started out small, and of course, by the time they got through, they were all making money and having a great time.
Yeah.
The city manager, the new city manager, came in and learned what was happening, and he ended up talking to me about it. So we went after these guys. That's when I realized that when a cop is most dangerous is when they face the possibility of felony charges and prison. That's when they turn and really get serious. So I'm
yeah.
watching this. If there should be any criminal sanctions against any of these deputies, I'll start watching my tail pretty good then, because that really makes them mad.
Yeah, the last thing they want to do is end up in where they've been putting everybody, that's for sure.
Yeah, I got about 30 more years before I'm willing to become a martyr. But in the meantime, you know, these guys, I don't want to sound too cocky here, but they don't scare me. To me, they're nothing more than law-breaking thugs. Any one of whom can be dangerous, but nevertheless, I would, you know what I'd be more frightened of? I'd be more frightened of Americans not giving a damn about this particular issue, about this story.
Right.
If everybody just said, oh, yeah, that happens, Matt Hart must have done something wrong. You know, we hear that all the time. Somebody gets in trouble or has some encounter with law enforcement. It's taken for granted by so many people that obviously the person must have been doing something wrong, otherwise
right.
they wouldn't have that fact. And that's, we all know that, you know, that's so untrue. And here's a perfect case where a guy was minding his own business, doing absolutely nothing wrong, and ended up basically fighting for his life, literally. Not that he faced any kind of life sentence, but, I mean, you know, he could have faced, if he had decided to fight this and lost it with a bad attorney, he could have been facing conviction on 4 or 5 felonies, according to the district attorney.
Wow. Now, the other thing was, he was out, like, in his yard practicing with a .22 rifle, wasn't he?
That's right.
It wasn't like some high-powered, you know, .308 or .300 Win Mag or something. He was out there with a little .22 plinking.
.22 single shot rifle and sighting
single shot
rifle. Yep, it was pretty bizarre. I mean, it wasn't as though the cops could see that he had a whole arsenal. To me, there is still no explanation as to why they went into the gun safe. That just baffles me.
Right,
a few cops
right.
talk about, well, you know, maybe he could go into the house, maybe we could, but anything else. The idea of going into the gun safe and then removing things and then fabricating crimes just to make sure that this guy didn't successfully sue the county, way bizarre.
It's sort of like there's a it's sort of like the, you know, an incident that I knew of down in New Orleans with a couple that was getting out of New Orleans. Now, here's a couple with they have 2 children and 3 dogs, and they're getting during Hurricane Katrina. They were there during, you know, the dams broke, the levees broke rather, and the water came flooding in. And the father was an avid fisherman, so they had a boat. They jump in the boat, they put their family in, and the father, of course, puts his shotgun, a couple of shotguns, into the boat for protection, so they can get out of New Orleans, you know, safely because of all the looting, robbing, killing, and raping
sure.
going on down there. So he comes up, and they see these officers standing on the bank. So they immediately drive the boat over to the bank thinking, oh, we're saved. You know, these guys are going to help us. What did the cops do? They said, do you have any weapons on the boat? He goes, well, yeah. They go, okay, put your hands up. He goes, well, what? They go, put your, they all drew their guns on him. Put your hands up. Him and his wife and his kids, you know, everybody get your hands up. And so they're standing there in their boat with their hands up. The cops pull, you know, the boat up. They get everybody off the boat. They handcuff them. They search the entire boat. They take his guns, and one of his shotguns, I guess, was pretty sweet. And one of the cops, he said, you know, Dan, the one thing, and I've got this on video, by the way, he said, the one thing that makes me more angry than anything is when here they are disarming me, and they're sitting there discussing who's going to get my one shotgun, how nice it is, and who's going to get it, which one of them is going to get it. Oh, well, let me have that because my son needs a shotgun like that. And they were giving up his shotguns right while he was standing there, and he said, what are you going to do, just like leave us? And I said, okay, leave, go ahead and go. And, you know, he said, wait a minute, you've disarmed me. I have a wife and children here, and now you just want me to leave? And how am I going to? They said, that's your tough luck. And they just let him go. And, of course, when I met him, he was able to buy a van or get a van, an old beat-up van, and his wife and children, they were all sleeping in the van. They had no more money. They were out of money. Of course, I was there on a rescue mission from Florida, so I had, thousands of dollars in my pocket that people had given me and to use to help people there. So I gave him $500. And he, you know, him and his wife were in tears. And I'm telling you, I was appalled at what had happened to these people and how they took his guns. But that was a really frightening thing. And now you mentioned something here. The police have become much more aggressive now. They're no longer, like during protesting or any kind of, we have a right to assemble, right, and protest and to express our opinion. And now they're telling us that we can't do that, that we have to go stand in this quarantined area they set up for us over here, which is a half a mile from where we really need to be.
Yeah.
And they completely lost it.
Yeah. I was going to say, or go to City Hall and get a permit that they never bothered to issue for you.
Well, exactly, because they have the authority to reject any permit. They can say yes, you can, or no, you can't.
And then if you don't like it, call your lawyer, fight us. And by the time you get through doing all that stuff, the event is gone, or canceled or whatever. They have amazing power. And I think city governments have become extremely unfriendly. I'm in a small town here in Paso Robles, California. We have a population of about 35, 40,000. And basically a totally unresponsive city hall. They won't answer questions. They basically tell you if you need information as a reporter, file a Freedom of Information request. It's bizarre. It's changed a great deal since I've been in the business, and it's not for the good because the people have a right to know, and they have very little opportunity to find out.
That's it. They're my mother-in-law was actually hit head-on by a Palm Beach County sheriff. He flew over the median in the road. There was two lanes going south, two lanes coming north. A grass median in between, with curbs on each side, of course, and grass and little trees and things. And he was going so fast, he flew, and I measured it. He flew, and now this is a fully loaded police car. They're special heavy cars built for racing. And he flew in the air 18 feet. 18 feet from hitting the curb on his side, flew in the air 18 feet, and came across and landed right in front of my mother-in-law's car and hit her head on.
Wow.
Hit her head on. Good. Now listen, I was the first relative to the scene of the accident, okay? When I got there, there were no less than 10 sheriffs surrounding the sheriff's car. It looked like a motorhome had been hit. It exploded. There was paper everywhere, debris everywhere, because the police officer had all this stuff. Everything in his car basically exploded out of the windows and flew everywhere. His trunk flew open. All of his paperwork in the trunk flew all over the road. I mean, there was stuff everywhere. And by the way, I'll say this, that the only reason my mother-in-law wasn't killed in that car accident was because she was driving a brand new Acura. And I will say that the integrity of that car was incredible. That engine,
basically went underneath her car, and in the cage where we sit, you know, in the passengers and the driver was pretty much the integrity of the cage was completely intact. So that car really saved her life. But when I got there, there were 10 sheriffs around the sheriff's car, and not one sheriff was over at my mother-in-law's car. But a neighbor had a guy who lived right there and heard the accident, came running out, and he was holding my mother-in-law's hand. Of course, they had just gotten her onto the stretcher. She, you know, slit her knee open, and of course, you know, she was in severe shock because she got hit so hard, and the airbag is going off and slamming into her, and everything was just, she was in shock. And what happened was, so I went over to the cops, you know, I said, well, I'm looking at them standing around I said, well, how's the deputy? And they all stand, they all face me, oh, he's fine. And I try to go over and they go, no, sorry, you can't come any closer. I said, what do you mean I can't come any closer? They said, no, sorry, you know, he's okay. Everything will be okay. Just go back, you know, go back over there. And they wouldn't let me anywhere near him to even see him. And of course, you know, at that time, they're supposed to have the state police come in and investigate anytime a sheriff is in an accident or there's something's questionable about the sheriff's department, they're supposed to call in the state police to come in and investigate it so it's not the same department investigating themselves. Well, in this case, they didn't call the state police. They did not call them. They kept them out of it. The deputy was whisked away to the better hospital. They took my mother-in-law to the a second-rate hospital, but they took the deputy to the better hospital because they wouldn't take him to the same hospitals. They made sure of that. And basically, he got away with it scot-free, completely. No reprimand, no anything.
Was he drunk?
Oh, he had to have been. He absolutely had to have been. And
they were protecting him, and they were trying to discourage a lawsuit.
Absolutely. They wouldn't. Oh, by the way, I did say the one thing I did, you know, because my father-in-law was pretty shook up, and they were all shook up. I said, first thing we need to do right now is get an attorney, immediately. And I got them an attorney, and I said, the first thing you need to do is go after the blood work of that officer that hit her. I want to see the blood work and a report on the toxicology report. And, of course, you know what the sheriff's department said? We're not going to release it. We're not going to release it. And they didn't.
Whatever they want to do.
That's right. Hey, when you carry that much firepower, I guess you can do whatever you want to do, right?
Unless somebody is watching over them with some oversight, and sadly that seems to be disappearing.
So I think what we have right now are our police departments have gained too much power. They have too much power, and that power is corrupting them.
I think you're exactly right.
Yeah, and you know we've all heard, you know, power corrupts absolutely. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. So we have, you know, the sheriff's department. Think about it. In your county, your sheriff's department probably has the biggest budget of anything other than education.
Yep, no doubt about that.
Right. In here in Palm Beach County, by the way, I don't know if it is for the year 2010, Daniel, but for the year 2009, Palm Beach County has had more sheriffs per capita here than any other county in the entire United States. You can't drive 2 minutes here without seeing a sheriff or two or three of them. I mean, they're just like everywhere.
And there's no doubt that if you ask them, they need a lot more.
Well, they do, and that's exactly what the sheriff was. Yeah, they need more sheriffs to fight crime. I asked the sheriff's assistant here at a political meeting. He couldn't show up, so I asked his assistant, his representative. I said, "Why do you guys need 1,500 assault rifles?" And she looked at me. She said, "Well, because you have them." That's what she said. I said, "Well, we're supposed to have them. We're the people. You know, we're the militia."
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That is amazing.
And then she said, "Well, we have a lot of gang warfare here." And I go, "In Palm Beach County? Hey, Richard, when's the last time you read a story on gang warfare in Palm Beach County?"
Oh, give me a break. And you know, another thing, when you were talking about They need more police officers to combat crime in this county. Well, they're more police officers across the country, they're reactive. They're not proactive. Perfect example of it, did any police officer stop that jewelry store owner earlier this week from being shot and killed by two robbers? No.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
They're there to clean up the mess afterwards, plain and simple.
That's right. Or create a mess.
and that's why you see 15 of them show up to the scene after that, because they're not doing anything else except getting fat in donut shops and stuff like that.
That's right. Let me change the subject for a second. You guys have a lot of listeners in Palm Beach.
We actually have.
You're kind of in Palm Beach or that area, right?
We're in Palm Beach County, yes. This is where
yeah.
both Richard and I live. But we have listeners actually all over the United States and all over the world.
I was going to say all over the world, absolutely, on the Internet. The reason I asked is that my cousin, Tom Blackburn, is a former member of the Palm Beach Post editorial board. And he still writes a column for them. In fact, I just sent him an email today. I located him and sent him an email. And while I was doing it, I realized that you guys were in Palm Beach too. So I thought I'd just mention that. He's a good old boy. But anyway,
Is he as open-minded as you are?
I think so. I'm looking at some of his columns here on the website, and looks like some of his columns are pretty decent. He hits the big issues. I like local news. He looks like he's for example, he's got a headline here: Obama dashes liberal dreams on Guantanamo, healthcare, and drilling. He's probably pretty much down the middle of the road if he's a typical Blackburn.
Right. Down the middle of the road. I don't know what we can say that about you anymore, Daniel, because putting up this video up that you did is I don't think you're any longer down the middle of the road. I think you've kind of like drew a line in the sand here.
Well, I have slipped a little bit into advocacy journalism on this particular story. I think that's probably the wave of the future. This would have been a difficult story to tell if, for example, you had a sheriff's spokesman countering everything that was done, you know, as happens in the kind of the mainstream media. This was the type of a story that basically, as I said at the end of it, was done without the cooperation of the sheriff's department, and very likely is a show they probably never would have liked to have seen. They probably would have preferred to
Right.
know about this all their lives.
Maybe what we ought to do is we ought to call up the sheriff's department, Richard, and have them come on the program.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I love the way they'll talk about me. You know, I'm a I'm a malcontent. Take things out of context. I've got a hidden agenda. Nobody seems to know what it is, but I've got a hidden agenda.
Okay.
Somebody even wrote in on somebody else's website here in the county. They thought they had spotted an Obama sticker on my car. So,
oh, really? Wow.
Well, it doesn't take much to be hated around here. I'm used to it. I'm sure you guys are too.
Yeah. By the way, Daniel, just out of curiosity for our listeners, also, did Matt ever get back all his rifles, guns?
I was on when I launched the website. A few days later, I was on a local radio show here in town called Hometown Talk Radio. And when I got home from being on that radio show at about 6:30 p.m., I got a phone call from Matt, who said he had just been informed by the public defender's office that the four remaining guns were going to be returned to him as soon as a judge signed off on them. So he has not yet received them all, but he's been told that he'll receive four guns, minus one of them will be minus a receiver, which I guess is pretty much the whole gun.
Really?
I imagine they want to keep something, I think, so that they'll always be able to say, well, you know, Matt Hart was never really quite cleared completely. I think that's what they're up to. But so he probably will get his guns. I don't know if he's going to have a basis for a state lawsuit because 2 years have passed. I think maybe he's let some deadlines go. But there is a lot of talk here about a federal lawsuit because it's very likely a civil rights violation. And that has a 5-year statute of limitations.
Right, right. Well, he definitely needs
federal. I think these were crimes committed under color of authority anyway, which makes them federal crimes.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Absolutely. No, I don't think there's any doubt about that, you know, and the heck with what the attorneys say, because they'll say anything they can just to perpetuate their own station in life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no doubt about after watching this, and I'll tell you something, Daniel. You know, we're gonna put this up on our website. Richard and I were talking before you came on. We're gonna get Casey's able to see all the hits that are gonna come in here, and we'll put that up. And that way they can also go to your website and take a look at it. And, of course, we want to talk to you in the near future. I'll be giving you a call. Perhaps we can figure out a way to broadcast our program from your .tv website here. That would really be interesting.
You bet it would be. You bet.
Yeah. You know, American Politics 101, you know, like I said earlier, our motto is truth in the news. You know, we're willing to tell any news story as long as it's the truth. We're not going to sugarcoat it, change it, or edit it any way, shape, or form to make it anything different than what it really is. And if there's something evil going on, then we're going to try and expose it. And we have done that with a lot of folks that have come on our program. Of course, one of the big ones I was telling you about was Senator Nancy Schaefer. And you know, unfortunately, she lost her life and so did her husband because she was trying to protect the children of this country. But Bill Bowen is in your area, and we need to really hook you up with Bill Bowen because, wow, talk about an interesting – wouldn't you say, Richard, he's just one interesting guy that he just really knows his stuff.
Yes.
That'd be great.
Yes, sure.
I'd appreciate that. Anything we can do to move this message forward, man, I'll tell you, it's – I'm not a terribly religious guy, but this is this gets my religious fervor moving.
Right, exactly. And again, I think it would be worth it also for you to look into the Schaefer Cox situation right now because that could become very volatile at any point. And of course, you know, the FBI agents that are now up there in Alaska are they're not looking to resolve anything. They're looking to actually, you know, to eliminating some people. And that's hard for us to believe that, you know, FBI agents would be that way. But then again, you know, if you really look at some of the actions they've taken, you know, innocent people get killed and they say, oh, sorry, we made a mistake or maybe we were a little bit too aggressive. But again, if we were to do that, we would be in jail for the rest of our lives if not, you know, tried and convicted for first-degree murder. It's just not right.
That's exactly right.
They should be just as accountable as any of us. In fact, even more accountable because they're wielding so much authority.
Exactly. More so. They need to be held to a much higher standard. And if they we wouldn't see the abuses. And unfortunately, we the people are the only ones who can hold their feet to the fire.
That's it. If we're not involved, then we deserve exactly what we get.
So true.
That's
so
all there is. Yep. And unfortunately, again, that's why things have gotten so far out of control. They've gotten to the degree where we're appalled and seeing cases like this with Matt Hart. And, you know, how do we take that back? It's going to be even a greater struggle trying to get back what we've lost.
Right. Think where we, how bad off things would be if we didn't have the Internet.
Oh, boy. Wow, could you imagine?
No contact. Yep, there would be no contact. We'd all be isolated, and we would be easy pickings.
Yeah, well, we would have never heard about this case, probably, or maybe a year or two down the road when it was all too late and over with, and, you know, there couldn't be any kind of citizen action taken where, you know, we all get together, we support someone, and,
because it would be too late. It would be too far down the information highway to really do anything about it. Like you said, the statute of limitations there in California is already up on this case.
For the state level, yeah. But I tell you, though, it's a federal case from the beginning to the end, so I wouldn't even see the state being involved in this. This is a federal case, a violation of law under color of authority, and these guys should face some of their own music.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to see them go to jail for what they did. I'll be honest with you. I'd like to see... Pardon me?
I said I'll keep you posted on what's going on out here.
You bet. You bet. We appreciate it. Well, listen, Daniel, we appreciate it. Richard and I and our listening, viewing audience, we really appreciate you coming on American Politics 101 and sharing the truth with us. And we're going to help continue to get this video to go viral. And it already has, actually. So I think 1.7 million plus is viral for sure. So congratulations on that.
The link to his website is already up on our website on the main page.
Great, great.
Can't
That's
tell
awesome.
You guys how much I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate what you've done, Daniel. Listen, if you need us for anything, and again, we'll be in touch with you, but if you need us for anything, please feel free to call anytime and get in touch with us.
Sure will. Keep fighting the good fight.
You bet, and you give Matt Hart our regards, and as soon as he's able to, we'd love to interview him on the program, have both of you come on.
You bet. We'll get him up.
Okay. Have a good night and God bless. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Daniel.
Folks, that is one incredible story. One incredible story. I don't know how many of you who are listening tonight have actually viewed the video, but I'm telling you, I know when this program's over, you're probably going to get right on there and watch the whole thing, and you're going to be shocked. Nothing short of just absolutely appalled and shocked at what you're going to see. And Richard, thanks a lot. I think it was a great show tonight. We brought a lot of good information. And next week, we're going to have Dr. Catherine Albrecht, the author, co-author of Spy Chips, probably known as the world's foremost expert on the, I would say, the evil use of the RFID chips and how they're going to be used to gather information. Because make no mistake about it, they're saying they're going to do this for good, for inventory and things of that nature, but Dr. Catherine Albrecht has heard them say they're going to use it to track what we do.
Plain and simple.
Plain and simple. Yep. So, hey, for Richard Servistan and Dan Gonzalez on American Politics 101, folks, thank you all for listening tonight. Tell your friends about us, and we look forward to seeing you next week, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great night. God bless. Good night, Richard.
Good night.